Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I'm Travis and hope you're having a good 2025. Hope things are going smooth for you. I've got a top 10 list, much like the Jay Leno Letterman shows of old that I grew up watching on cable TV. If you're old enough to remember cable TV, you are probably about my age. Haha, just kidding. So we're going to have a fun show today to talk about the best ways that you can grow wealth in 2025. We're going to talk through just some things that are going on promo-wise the beginning of this year with SLP and SLP Wealth. And I wanted to really focus on some things that I think are really cutting edge, that things that a lot of people aren't doing that could make a huge difference in actual, like, you reaching your financial goals way faster. With that said, let's jump into the top 10 list. Number one is track your spending and income. Specifically, I think you should track it in an app. And I think that some of the options out there, YNAB, there's Tiller, there's Monarch Money, there used to be Mint, not anymore. The best one that I've seen is Monarch Money, and that's the one that we're actually using with our financial planning clients. And the reason is this. The benefit of it is this. I'm going to give you an example. So I was getting a catering order. I ordered three different sets of meals. I got there, and the catering spot only had two of those three sets of meals. So I was like, well, that's not right. I ordered three, and then I was going to drive off because I had the kids in the car. I was supposed to get it and go and drop them off at something. And I was like, well, this doesn't make any sense. And so I pulled over, I pulled up my Monarch app and I typed in just like the name of the vendor. And then I found three charges and it showed the amount, it showed when, and it showed specifically what card it was on. And so then I was able to pull up the card that I had spent that money on and scroll down to the date that those transactions happened on. And I went and showed it to the vendor, hey, look, here's three charges on my card. And then they looked, I showed my email and I said, only got two receipts, but for whatever reason, I got three charges. And they looked at it and they're like, oh shoot, yeah, I guess this is right. And they had their manager pull up their Stripe account, look at it. And sure enough, I bought three catering orders. I was right. I should have gotten three catering orders. They gave me an extra one that they had luckily made, that apparently they do that regularly just in case they mess up an order, they have a couple extras. And I would not have been able to save that without this app where I track my spending and my savings. Now, I used to use YNAB for a really long time. I still like YNAB, but I like Monarch better. And the reason is because YNAB requires you to spend a lot of time actually organizing things, and the categorization for the rules are not as seamless. And the rules I found like don't get remembered as easily, whereas Monarch, I can create a rule, apply it to prior transactions, and it remembers it forever. So for an example, anything that's kind of like fun, I create a new category called subscriptions. And there's other things out there like Rocket Money that supposedly help you identify and cancel unwanted subscriptions. What's better to me is just having awareness of them. I don't necessarily need somebody to tell me every month that I should cancel my Netflix account. I just want to know how much I'm spending, when it's coming out, and how many of these things am I paying for. And so I've got this category, this custom category that's called subscriptions that I like to like recategorize all those things to put it in the bucket of subscriptions so that I know, hey, if things, you know, really fell apart, here's my, you know, subscriptions thing. Now, I actually keep that personally. I keep that separate from categories like my pest control and financial planning that I pay for and things like that, sort of because I view those as just real value adds that add more money than they subtract. So an example of that is like, do I want to be personally responsible for trapping the mice and monitoring the termite stations and doing these things for my house? No, I'd work very hard to avoid doing that. Just, you know, I'll definitely kill insects and things like that, but I just prefer to outsource that. And then, you know, by having those termite monitoring stations, I don't have to worry as much about, you know, there being some sort of infestation since my house is made of wood, right? So there's certain kind of like ways that I think about money that tracking my spending and my income helps me think through what do my finances actually reflect. And one of the things that is helpful for me too is I like to look at my spending over the past year with like all categories, and then I like to back out certain things like charity, gifts to others, to see like what is my true number that if I was really wanting to be financially independent and retire tomorrow, like what do I actually need to do that minus all the extras, right? So I think that this stuff is really helpful for a couple reasons. I think that one, if you're ever in that awkward moment like I've had with many, many vendors where I'm like, you're at like a hotel front desk and you booked a room for yourself and for your in-laws and they only have one room and they're saying, sorry, you all have to bunk in the one room together with your kids and the in-laws and everybody. You can have a tool that easily allows you to pull up what you spent. And if you do, you know, credit card rewards hacking, this makes not using a spending app really difficult, honestly, because you can't know which card it's on. But I was able to pull up, hey, here's the vendor, here's the two charges. And then when they made us stay in the one room, I was able to track and make sure by like checking the vendor name in my app to make sure that we got the refund on the several hundred dollars that it cost for that room that would have stunk if I hadn't gotten it. I actually used this recently. My father-in-law got a really fancy coffee machine for Christmas. It was very expensive, but he wanted one that was less expensive. And so they refunded that first one and got a different one. And it would have stunk if like that refund had never happened, right? A lot of people just sort of hope that that refund happens. You know, mistakes happen. So I was able to type in that vendor, make sure that I got that refund. So I think that there's one duplicate transactions, mistaken transactions purpose for tracking your saving and your spending. And there's a whole second benefit of it, of like awareness. So having all the awareness of your income, your spending, your categories, where everything's going, when certain categories come out, like your car insurance, or when, you know, your home gets reassessed for property taxes so that you can see when your, you know, housing payment jumps up or changes. All these things are real helpful and definitely recommend doing it. It'll change your life, I think, if you do it and spend a little bit of time doing it. I think with Monarch Money, the time investment is fairly minimal to do this now because of AI and categorizations and things like that. Number two out of 10 is paying attention to your taxes. So what I mean by this is when I look at a 1040, that's the thing where you report the summary of everything that you did on your taxes that year. I like to look at a couple things. I like to look at your deduction choice. Are you itemizing? Are you using the standard deduction? Do you have a QBI deduction because you got a small business? And, you know, is there any kind of other things that you've got, other types of income? Sometimes the other income showing up on there is not a good thing. Now you might say, that sounds nuts. Well, if you have a ton of interest income, maybe you need to say, well, should I be using tax-free bonds instead of taxable bonds, right? Or a tax-free money market instead of a taxable money market or savings account. Maybe if you have no QBI deduction and you're a business owner, maybe you need to look at how you're doing your business taxes to make sure you're getting the maximum deduction, which is like 20% of your profits if you're below certain income thresholds. That's a pretty big deal. If you're doing the standard deduction, but you're making above a certain amount of money, maybe you need to pay attention a little more closely to how you're doing charitable deductions. Or maybe there's an option to potentially double up on your charitable contributions in one particular calendar year to take a higher itemized deduction one year and a higher standard deduction the other year. So there's all kinds of things you can get from looking at your 1040 and just paying attention. I'm not talking about being a, you know, a tax expert. That's not what you need to be. Just paying attention to your 1040 can make a huge difference, because it's going to show you things about your life financially that you might be able to improve on. Not always, but sometimes. Number three out of 10 is think about if you are earning a fair wage or not. So are you earning a fair wage in your job, and what are some things that you could do to optimize your work conditions to potentially make yourself happier? I will give you some thoughts on this. So a lot of people, I think, could benefit from 4-day work weeks instead of 5-day work weeks. It's not always possible, but this is actually something that if you really wanted to prioritize it, maybe it could be possible. Maybe you could swing it. This is maybe more easy if you are the boss and you own a business, but even if you're not, even if you're a W-2 employee, you know, you should be able to have conversations about what are you willing to trade to get more of what you want. So sometimes you're trading 4-day work week for something that doesn't, instead of a big raise. Sometimes you're trading not a 4-day work week. Maybe you just really need to and want to work very full-time and make very full-time money. And another thing to think about is the history sort of suggests that folks that are willing to change jobs do tend to get higher pay levels over time than people who are not willing to change jobs. That's not always the case, of course. But what can sometimes help if you like your job, if you do want higher pay, is something called a retention package. So if you go out and you get an offer from another spot and bring that offer to your current employer and ask if that employer can match it, well, sometimes the employer doesn't necessarily match it, but what they do is they might throw in extra PTO. They might offer some of a raise. They might offer better work benefits, maybe an increased admin time or increased research time. There are things that are financial and non-financial about our jobs, and you deserve to have the happiest work situation that you possibly can. And if you don't have that, or you think there's some improvement areas for that, then just think about asking what you need to ask for And the best way to get a yes on that is to be someone who is a team player, who goes above and beyond, and who also goes out and gets market comps, because that's ultimately what determines what everybody gets paid in the world, is just market comparisons and market comps as to what somebody should get. Number four on my top 10 list, protecting your mental health. I am an American that struggles with anxiety disorder. I think about that a lot because it's like, well, in some ways as a business owner, sometimes I feel like my anxiety has helped me as a business owner because I'm like, well, why? I've got to get this thing done immediately. I can't wait till tomorrow because, oh my gosh, the world might end, right? So in some ways that's been helpful, but I think in some ways it's been not helpful at all for me. And I think that a lot of people these days with the ubiquitous smartphone usage, with the ubiquitous always on mentality of that a lot of us have with our work, with the isolation that some of us face, with the pressures of trying to parent as a two-income household and trying to divide those responsibilities up well while you're, you know, exhausted from your job and everything, and just all the pressures of modern life, it's tough. Give yourself some grace. Pat yourself on the back. Say, I did a great job this week. Say, you are enough. Say that, you know, you don't have to be anything more than you are right now. That might sound kind of whatever, kumbaya or something, whatever the word is, but it's true. It's true that you're enough. It's true that there's lots of people in your life that love you, and patients or customers or clients in your life that think you're doing a bang-up job, even if a couple of them don't. I mean, I'll say this. I take criticism really hard, even though I probably shouldn't. I'm a people pleaser by nature, and maybe you, as a healing person or a professional that helps others, maybe you take stuff too hard sometimes. Maybe the one-star Google review that you got from a patient visit just ruined your week. Maybe you're struggling from an interest level and a desire to do things. Whatever that struggle is, maybe it's socially you feel like you don't have as many friends now that you're in your 30s or 40s and that's hard. Whatever you're going through, let's make some investments in mental health together. I go to counseling. I've been going to counseling for a year for my anxiety disorder. I think it's helped enormously. Will some future acquisition be less interested in my business because I disclose publicly that I have anxiety disorder? I don't care. I don't care if that negatively hurts my acquisition, whatever, because I think it's more important to mention it to people, to encourage people, to let other people know that you're not a bad person or you're not weird. If you're struggling, and doesn't have to be with anxiety disorder, it could be depression, it could be any number of things, right? It could just be that you're tired. Maybe you don't have anything clinical, or you know, maybe you're not an oddball like me. Maybe you're just tired, or you know, you're going through a tough season of life, or you're whatever. I mean, but just whatever it is, like make some investments in that mental health. So what could that look like? Well, maybe it means going to therapy. Maybe it means giving one of these like online kind of things a try and seeing if any of them helps you out. Maybe it means scheduling a regular session of working out in the week with your favorite gym class. Or maybe it means investing in your new hobby you want to try of learning the cello. My wife's doing that right now. You know, I'm trying to set up a regular time to play racquetball with friends. I think it's just real important to, when you're feeling tired or you're feeling overwhelmed with something, you know, get help. Get that professional level help just to kind of validate that you're doing okay with therapy or talking to somebody. Or, you know, it could be a best friend too. You could just reach out to a best friend and talk about whatever you're going through. And a lot of people listening to this might be like, I'm not going through anything. Wow, this guy's weird. Okay. Being comfortable in your own skin is really important. That's what one of the things I'm finding and reflecting on is it's super important to be okay with looking in the mirror and being okay with who you are and not feeling like you need to be anything more. And self-improvement is great, but first of all, give yourself grace, give yourself a pat on the back, spend the money that you need to on your mental health and making sure that you have good mental health. And number five is technical and investee, and so hope you enjoy it. I mentioned it last week, but it's fixing your cost basis on your investments. And remember, we're talking about the ways to make this the wealthiest year ever, so this will be a part of that formula. So tip five out of 10, fixing your cost basis on your investments. So this is something where all you have to do is, if you're already working with a financial professional, you shouldn't have to worry about this. But if you're DIYing your investments, one of the huge hazards of DIYing your investments is people tend to not change their average cost method to specific identification of shares. That's a huge mistake, and it'll bite you in the butt tax-wise, and you'll pay a lot more in taxes than you need to. So the typical method for mutual funds is average cost for reporting to taxes. That means if I invest $10,000 every year and over 10 years, that $100,000 initial investment, you know, is now worth $300,000. Well, what's going to happen is probably the first $10,000, let's say, is worth $50,000. The second $10,000 is worth market value, let's say $30,000. And then you go on down the line. And so when you do average cost method, what you're doing is just incurring a bunch of gains, but you don't need to. And when you do a specific ID of shares, you can pick, okay, I want to sell these investments that have the smallest gains, therefore I have the smallest taxes, therefore I don't lose a bunch of money unnecessarily to the IRS for no reason. And for mutual funds, you have to opt out of average cost. You have to go to your investment provider if you're a DIYer, and you have to change that cost method from average cost to specific ID of shares. And that's just real important. If you don't do it, you will regret it at some point, and you'll pay higher taxes from not having done it before. And then you will say, okay, I'm going to go and log on and change my average cost method now. And same thing for stocks. You want to look out to make sure that your spec ID on stocks cost basis and not first in, first out, because then you'll have the same, you'll have even maybe even worse tax problems in that case. Because if you do that same example with like stocks or an ETF, well, now you're incurring the largest gain of all when you sell instead of the smallest gain. So I really think that these investment companies are kind of dumb to like not automatically give people the best tax situation instead of like literally the biggest gain possible. It doesn't make any sense. But a lot of these rules were set up back in the pre-computer day when they needed to keep things simple from an accounting perspective. And I think that's why they did it this way. As the default method, just because it was easy for them. So, you know, again, if you work with a financial professional, you'll maybe be spared some of that pain. Like a lot of people say, what's the point of paying an AUM fee on VTSAX? That's all I need. Well, you know, one reason diversification, one reason rebalancing, but a better reason of all is just paying attention to your cost basis, because nobody does it. And a lot of people wreck their taxes because they don't pay attention to cost basis. And that, you know, even if you were paying a 1% AUM fee, which a lot of places don't even charge that, but even if you were paying that fee, you could actually pay for that fee potentially, even if they're just managing one VTSEX mutual fund, just by paying attention to cost basis. It's wild. It's crazy. It's something that I wish more people paid attention to. So whether you are a person that's ready to turn over your investments to somebody else to manage that you trust, or you are a VTSAX internet forum rabbit enthusiast, or somewhere in between, pay attention to your cost basis and make sure you've got spec ID enabled for whenever you sell something. And make sure, too, that your historical cost basis information is correct. I found a random problem with my own investments from years ago. Recently, when I was donating some appreciated shares to a donor advised fund, where I noticed a cost basis change had not been applied to a lot of my investments, even though they said it was. So it's just like crazy. It's just interesting how many mistakes somebody who's not paying attention to their investments can make and just not even know they made the mistake. That's the other thing, is I guess if you don't know you made a mistake, then do you really need to worry about it? Well, I don't know. Now you know about it. So change away from average cost and first in, first out to spec ID of shares when you sell, so you get to choose which investment lot you sell when you do inevitably sell and not the investment company. And again, this doesn't really apply to retirement accounts. There's not taxable event reporting from retirement accounts. This really only applies to, you know, brokerage accounts. But, you know, whenever you do pull money out, you have to pay attention to which account you pull the money out of. And then that's a whole nother question mark of like withdrawal order over what account do you pull from. So that's number five, cost basis. So far we've got track your spending and income in an app like a Monarch Money or YNAB. Two, pay attention to your taxes by looking at your 1040, just thinking about if anything could be better. Three, make sure you're earning what you should be earning for a job that you enjoy. Four, protect your mental health. Five, fix your cost basis in your investments. Six is going to be get the right insurance. If I think about insurance, I think about something that I want to get over with as fast as possible and have minimal pain. My brother is leading our SLP insurance agency now. We were hanging out over the holidays. He was staying over at our house, and we just started chatting about my term life insurance premiums. And his little brothers like to do to big brothers. He ribbed me pretty hard because he let me know, oh, wait a second, you're paying 30% a year more than you should pay than if you'd shopped it through me. And I was like, shoot, well, like that stinks. And then he made some joke about, well, you might want to keep your policy because, you know, you've already passed the period where you off yourself in the first 2 years. Your family still gets the money. So I was like, oh, thanks. I appreciate that. And he goes, and by the way, you did a blood exam and you didn't even have to do one. If you'd gone with this other, you know, company that's similarly rated, you wouldn't have had to do a blood exam. And I was like, dadgummit. To be honest, I didn't know anything about term life insurance when I got my policy in place a long time ago. And so I just went with a company because they sponsored the Eagles. So, you know, go Birds. I'm an idiot financially, but go Birds. I'm just kidding. Well, not about the Birds part. I love the Birds. Hopefully we don't get a bunch of unsubscribes from that comment, but, you know, hope your team does well in the playoffs if you've got a team in the playoffs. But yeah, I think that's how people think about insurance sometimes is, have I heard of this company? You know, does this seem like a good price? Oh, they're asking me to do this blood exam. Should I do it? I guess so. So, you know, you want to get an experienced person that can give you options from different companies, right? When you're dealing with insurance, I think that's really important. A lot of times people don't realize that a lot of folks just work for fill in the blank insurance company. Like you might work for literally Travelers, or you might work for Geico, or you might work for Northwestern Mutual, or you might work for whatever, right? And if there's a captive agent, they're only going to show you policies from their company. The vast majority of consumers, I think, don't shop around very much on their insurance at all. And even when they're like looking for the first time, I don't think people shop around in their insurance coverage very often. I think that's why you see so many insurance companies spending so much money on sporting leagues and sponsoring sporting events, is because they know that the majority of consumers don't really shop around that much. And therefore, that consumer is incredibly valuable because that consumer is going to get roasted because they're going to go with the one company they heard that had a commercial on their favorite basketball or football game, right? And then they're just going to collect higher premiums for the same risk that other insurers would insure for less for the rest of that client's lifetime or period of risk to the thing they're insuring. I don't know. I'm kind of guilty of this sometimes by not shopping around in existing policies. But what I've learned about insurance is get somebody that can compare multiple options. Don't be afraid of shopping around a little bit. And just make sure that your insurance company is like decently rated, that, you know, some you've maybe heard of them before or can look them up if, and they've been around a long time. That's always a good thing. And make sure you're paying attention to the different options out there and not just going with whatever you've heard on a sporting event. So number seven, file your taxes the right way. So we have this big switchover administrations, obviously. Eventually, we're going to get a bunch of rulings on student loans, a bunch of new orders on student loans, and people are going to have to probably recertify their income sooner than a lot of people would hope with their IDR plan. And that means you need to be paying attention to how you file your taxes for tax year 2024 to make sure that you've done the right thing, joint or separate, and to make sure that you've minimized the taxable income you're showing to the extent allowable by law. There's lots of different ways that you can minimize things. There's lots of different ways that you can plan for the next year based off of mistakes you made for the prior year. I've certainly made lots of mistakes going back years and years over how I filed my taxes, the way I did things, the way I donated to charity. You could really make a long list, basically, of ways that I made mistakes. But the only bad thing about a mistake is if you don't learn from it. So I learned, okay, I need to start donating stocks to charity instead of cash because it's a better position to be in, allows me to save more in taxes. Oh, okay, I need to be an S-corp because I can save X amount in taxes. Oh, okay, I need to set up one of my corporations as C-corp because that's a better thing for taxes, right? So there's all these different things that if you have a tax person you can do, and if you don't really have super complex taxes, maybe you can handle some of these things on your own, but you definitely need to be paying attention to how you file your taxes no matter what. Number eight is going to be take your financial blessings into account when making your life plan. We can talk about this in a couple different ways. So I'll talk about it from this person that I know who passed away at a fairly young age, not super young, but, you know, in your 60s. If this person had taken into account that they were going to get not a huge inheritance, but a really decent sized inheritance, and they had put that into their financial planning, they could have retired earlier, and they didn't know they were going to pass away, obviously, but they probably would have retired earlier if they had let themselves psychologically take into account the inheritance they knew was going to come at some point, and if they had sort of planned realistically according to what was going to happen. So I think that this probably impacts our parents probably more so than us in terms of, you know, maybe some of you guys maybe still have living grandparents. What a blessing if you do. I miss mine all the time. But if you have somebody in your family that you know is going to be leaving you a legacy, I do not think it's wrong at all for you to start thinking about, well, how can I live the best life that I can live and make the financial plan that most accurately reflects all of the realities? And this might not just be that you have a trust or an inheritance coming your way at some point. It could also just be that you have a very stable income, or that you have a lot of negotiating power, or that you have the ability to set some serious terms and conditions for the kinds of jobs you work at because your specialty is in scarce supply or skill set is in dire need. So it doesn't necessarily just have to mean that you have an inheritance coming your way. What I mean is, like, a lot of people I find want to take a risk in their life, and a risk might be personal. It might be taking time off for kids. It might be wanting to travel more. It might be wanting to start a business. It might be wanting to get married and have a family. It might be wanting to buy a house. It might be wanting to do new construction build. There's all these risks that people want to take in their lives, and they, for whatever reason, kind of overplay the negatives that can happen. This is called catastrophizing. This is, you know, full circle. Remember, I talked about mental health. There's this thing called catastrophizing that a lot of people, especially people that struggle with anxiety, do, where you think, what is the absolute worst thing that can happen? Oh, that's what's going to happen. And you apply that line of thinking to a lot of different parts of your life when you really shouldn't. So the catastrophizing can get in the way of you enjoying things. It can get in the way of you doing things that are positive things. Things like buying the house, starting the business, taking reduced time at work, you know, negotiating for a higher raise or something. A lot of times people are terrified to ask the question because they're thinking, well, I could get fired. This house build could bankrupt me. This business could fail and I never would be given another loan ever again. But that is probably extremely unlikely, and you can usually define what that downside looks like and fight back against those negative thoughts. In the same token, if you do have a substantial, I don't know, if you have any kind of inheritance or trust that you know about or assets that are eventually coming to you or something like that, you know, you only want to plan for it if it's like very sure. And let's say your mom or dad's 65 and they have a lot of wealth, hypothetical here. Should you plan for that in your financial plan? Well, I think it means you can take more risk. I think it means that you have more freedom to go take bigger entrepreneurial risks that may or may not work out. I think it means that your financial plan is slightly different from somebody that doesn't have that. And if you have no inheritance coming your way or trust coming your way, that's also very common, by the way. Most people do not get any significant inheritance. Most people are caring for their parents, right? Let's use the example. What if you have the opposite? What if you know that you're going to have a family member who's going to be completely depending on you for their financial future because you're the only professional in the whole family and everybody's depending on you? Or maybe that's a ton of pressure, but maybe that's how you feel, right? And the flip side of things, don't overly feel the financial risks for obligations you feel like you have either. What I mean by that is, a lot of times somebody who has minimal assets can get a pretty sizable Medicaid benefit to stay in an assisted living or nursing home facility. And perhaps those facilities aren't the nicest ones in town, but they can also, especially in maybe more kind of regional, out of the way areas outside of the bigger cities, a lot of these can be just fine, perfectly adequate. So I think that a lot of times people feel like they have this obligation to put in a bunch of money towards family or elder care for parents or something. But you have to take into account all the different options that you have, right? Like, one example is my wife's parents, first generation, felt like they needed to help as much as they could with medical school tuition, so they sacrificed a ton to make sure that she came out with minimal debt. Well, it turns out she would have been better off going for PSLF, right? That's one of the reasons I started doing Student Loan Planner, was because of this big financial mistake that I discovered after working with, you know, my wife to figure out her student loans, right? So whether you're getting a big financial blessing or you have the blessing of blessing others because you were the most successful person in your family, or if it's anything in between there, take into account that in your financial plan so that you don't have to feel guilt or shame or worry, and so that you can live the life you want to live sooner. Because, you know, whether it's a big influx of cash or this potential outflux of cash because of your being the person everybody's looking to in your family, there's always ways to plan for that, define the worst case scenarios, think about how these things do not need to get in the way of what you want to do with your life. That was number 8. Number 9 of our top 10 tips for making 2025 your wealthiest year ever. Number 9 is prepare for a recession just in case. So there's a lot of things that could happen that we never know when it's going to happen until it happens, right? When it happens, it's so obvious. Everybody should have known it. It was so easy. We could spot it a mile away that there was going to be a recession. And that only happens after the fact. There's this joke, I think, that economists have called 5 out of the 3 past recessions successfully, something like that. And so I think that the idea behind being prepared for a recession is, you know, think about how much cash do you have? What are your actual expenses? Do you really have an emergency fund, or do you think you have an emergency fund? Going back to number one of tracking your spending and income in an app, this is very helpful for that because you can figure out what is my actual must-have non-discretionary spending that I absolutely spend every month no matter what, and times that by 6, now I at least have a 6-month runway if I have this at least this amount in cash. That's one big way to prepare for a recession. In terms of your other finances, you know, prepare yourself by having cash in the bank for any big projects that you are undertaking. So an example of this is a big home renovation, right? So, you know, I did this big home renovation a couple years ago, and I would have felt so sad if the economy had fallen apart right in the middle of that renovation if I had not had the cash saved up to pay for it. You know, in other words, take measured risk, be careful with the amount of risk that you take by always having your finances sort of ready for a recession in case it happens, so that if it does happen, it's not going to negatively impact you really that much compared to how it affects most people because you'll been prepared for it. So the things like the emergency fund, the things like paying attention to your housing costs, asking, you know, are you committing yourself to any big projects where you're not going to have a lot of flexibility? If so, do you have a pretty solid pile of cash that can pay for most of all that? Will you be able to downsize the project if things, you know, didn't go quite as well? Those sorts of things are pretty helpful to think about. Number 10, for the big ways to make 2025 your wealthiest year yet, set up automated recurring monthly contributions to investment accounts. I have a lot of data on this with our investment management clients. You know, unless you follow up with someone, unless you really encourage someone to set up recurring contributions, not a lot of people do this on their own. And this is just reality. I think that there's a million other things that people think about besides investing accounts. I think the way most people do investing accounts is they think, oh, look, I've got an extra $10,000 sitting here. Maybe I should put it somewhere. Oh, look, a brokerage account. I'm going to put it in that. That's not as good of a way to grow wealth as saying, okay, what is my spending and income? What is my amount of money I have in excess, right? So you might want to say, okay, if I've got an extra $5,000 a month in my budget that it's not currently being allocated for, I'm going to go ahead and set up a recurring contribution of, let's say, $2,000 a month to my brokerage account. And I'm going to have a recurring contribution of, let's say, $2,000 a month to savings. And then $1,000 a month is just extra fun money that I get to spend on whatever. This is why being aware of your finances and tracking things can add so much value to life, really, is because then you know what you're doing, why you're doing it. Your money's going to places where you're, because you're giving it a job to help you live a better life. That's what it's about. Money is just a freaking nothing unless you use it and plan for the future with it. Money is a store of value. It's reflecting the hard work we do, the investing choices we make, the delayed gratification we choose to endure that then can then reward us and help others. Other than that, it has no meaning. And so I just hope that finances is not something that makes you struggle. Remember, there's a whole bunch of things that you can enjoy for free. Going out and sitting on a park bench and pulling up an open source classic from years ago and enjoying the weather. I mean, it's kind of a weird thing to say right now with the wintry mix a lot of people are feeling, but you know, that's a free thing to do. If worst case, I always used to tell myself, right, whenever I was feeling scared or feeling worried about business or my job or something, I would say, well, I could always just go pay cash for a home somewhere on the Mississippi River and just stop and stare at the stream and enjoy nature. And I think sometimes we get so worried about like our mortgage or home renovation project or the car we need to replace, the kids' ballet class, the retirement we're worried about being behind on, right? I think that we just worry a lot. And I'm just, I think a lot, very aware of that with just the personal life story that I've lived. And so my hope for you is 2025 will be a year of joy. It will be a year of happiness. It will be a year of not worrying as much about your money, about a year where you're making a lot more progress on your finances than you ever dreamed that you could make. I hope it's a year that you're not worried about your student loans. I hope it's a year where you just make peace with the fact that what will be, and there will always be ways to save money with loopholes and tricks and strategies like the ones we study here at Student Loan Planner, but that it doesn't need to define you. It doesn't need to make you scared or worried or stressed, because you're going to do all the other things in your finances to make yourself arrive where you want to be. I do think that there's some joy to look forward to in your older years. I mean, one set of parents is going on like this Scandinavian cruise, and this other set of parents is going on like a Mediterranean cruise. And I'm like, I remember my parents when they were like a teacher and not working. And it's just amazing that through years of planning, they're enjoying their golden years. And it's exciting. You should enjoy your golden years, but you don't have to wait until your golden years. You can enjoy your years now. And you can enjoy your years by just taking a lot of the finance part of your stress off the plate by having a plan. The one thing that I would say about that is we do run a really big promo special at this time of year for financial planning through our fiduciary financial planners at SLP Wealth. If you have already done a student loan consult, you can get a really special deal on that financial planning relationship. SLPWealth.com/book is the link to set that up. And then if you've never done a student loan planner consult before, and you still have student loans, you can still get an amazing deal on SLP Wealth Financial Planning. You'll also get a discount on doing a student loan consult because you'd book that and then get a discount on both services if you haven't done a consult before when you're becoming a client of SLP Wealth. So the link again to get the best discount on financial planning is slpwealth.com/book. That promo special ends at the end of Thursday night, I believe. So you don't have a ton of time to get that discount. I'll mention what the discount is in the email blasts that everybody's going to be getting during this week that the podcast comes out on. I hope that you, if you're already a client of SLP Wealth, I hope that you take some of these tips, and I hope you just send an email to your financial planner. And I hope that you say, you know, hey, we'll love to set up a meeting to just talk about some of these for my life. I want to help get my account set up in Monarch Money so I can track my spending and income better. I'd like to think through my insurance and just making sure that I'm set there. I'd like to think through what my parents', you know, elder care needs are going to do to my retirement date. Or I'd like to think about what my parents' planned inheritance they're going to be giving me will impact when I can reduce my hours that I work, where I don't have to work as hard. Right? So these are all kinds of examples of things that you could be reaching out to your financial planner if you're already an SLP Wealth client. And if you're not, go ahead and sign up and give it a try. There's no harm in giving it a try. I think that you're going to find that we offer a very affordable service for the level of service that we provide that's profession-specific and student loan aware, which you're not going to have to waste time at most advisors like you would having to explain how an IDR plan works. That's one of the big reasons that we exist, is to help student loan borrowers and professionals get that life-changing financial advice for a fraction of the cost that you'd find at a lot of other places. So I'll say again, slpwealth.com/book. SLP Wealth is a RIA with registered investment advisor with the SEC, and this investment performance is no guarantee of the past performance is no guarantee of future results, and all investing comes with a loss of risk. slpwealth.com/book if you want to try becoming a financial planning client of SLP Wealth, slpwealth.com/book, and have a wonderful, wonderful start to your 2025.